the deadline for the IPv6 transition looms. Companies just starting in on the switch from IPv4 to IPv6 could probably use a few pointers on how to do this as smoothly as possible. If this sounds familiar, then have a listen to today's podcast. I'm Erin Watkins, Assistant Site Editor with SearchDataCenter.com, and with me today is Pete Sclafani, Chief Information Officer with SixConnect, a network automation provider located in California. Pete, welcome to the podcast, and thanks for joining me.
Hi, Erin. Thanks for having me.
So what are some of the key differences between IPv4 and IPv6?
Erin, the key differences are pretty technical, but there are some operational side effects that come out of it. Other than the greatly increased address space, for example, 32 versus 128 bits, you now have the introduction of letters into the IP address notation. Before, you just had numbers. So the result is that you now have a much more complex notation and IP addressing schema. So be prepared for more subnet calculations, and your spreadsheets are probably not going to cut it anymore.
So what should data center IT staff be doing to prepare for IPv6?
One of the most important preparation steps is getting a handle on your current IPv4 space and understanding what's on your network, both behind the firewall and in, you know, your various cloud footprints. The majority of companies today are managing their IPv4 environments with a combination of spreadsheets, post-it notes, and reactive management with a sprinkle of luck. So doing any prep work for IPv6 has to also lay the groundwork for being proactive. That can be tough to do when your typical network engineers are firefighting all day, and they may not have the bandwidth to think strategically about implementing best practices for IPv6. What we usually recommend is that IT staff start small and just get a handle on the current IPv4 space that they have and the devices that are currently on their network. If they have a process or automation platform, this is hopefully an easy exercise. But before you repeat the mistakes of your legacy V4 network with V6, it pays to understand the context of your current environment.
Great. So what are some common obstacles then and consequent workarounds with which to make the switch?
One common obstacle is simply IPv6 compatibility. Even with some hardware or software that's been deployed, you may have surprises in IPv6 support or even limited support. Again, since IPv6 has been relegated to a checkbox on a data sheet, it can really make it tough to find vendor products that actually support IPv6 correctly. We see this all the time on the application side as well. Vendors claim an application is now IPv6 compatible, but all they did was add a text box to the GUI for storing an IPv6 address. That's not quite the same thing. So depending on your IPv6 readiness needs, you may have to train everyone from the network side to systems to storage and even your application developers. One approach to compatibility is tunneling, where IPv6 traffic is tunneled through an IPv4 network, so also called Teredo in other circles. This situation comes up when IPv6 traffic has to pass through an IPv4-only endpoint.
So then what impact will the switch have to enterprise IT shops?
So there's really three areas of impact that will happen here. One of them is just going to be on the front-end web presence, so at integrating with other applications. So managing these aspects of interaction will impact both servers, networking, storage, DNS, anything network-related. Given that many IT groups have been functioning in silos for so long, IPv6 is going to be one of those significant projects that affects multiple departments. The impact is also going to stretch outside the enterprise. For example, for cloud applications, you'll now have two methods of connectivity to manage, IPv4 and IPv6. They can be run concurrently, of course, but you'll notice, of course, you can also run IPv6-only networks, and you can run V4-only. So again, just creates more complexity in your network. As IPv4 depletion becomes more pronounced, and V6-only services become a necessity, enterprises will see an increase in services hosted behind NAT, carrier-grade PAT, port address translation, and tunneling. On the security side, for the typical enterprise, NAT is simply a way of life, so bringing IPv6 management behind the firewall goes behind the typical one-to-one NAT and firewall ACLs. ACLs are access control lists. In addition, the more complex V4 network topologies will require some creative solutions to deal with VPNs, authentication, and IP address tracking and management. Third, you have internal addressing, with many devices already having IPv6 enabled, especially with the increasing trend to bring your own device to the enterprise. IPv6 is most likely on your network already, and you may not even know it. You could even be running 6 and 4 tunnels, and to your infrastructure, it looks like you're running V4 traffic only. The problem here is that the scanning and management tools you use to manage your internal IP space are built on IPv4 mindsets and don't scale well when working with subnets that number in the quintillions.
My final question, what, if anything, will happen to those running IPv4 when IPv6 becomes the norm?
So, as IPv4 space runs out, and when it's gone completely, there will be many hosts out on the internet that only have a V6 address. That means that some sort of technology must be used that allows a V4-only host to communicate with a V6-only host, or else they won't be able to talk at all. Depending on the scenario, there are many different methods for encapsulating V6 into V4, or vice versa. These methods are referred to as tunneling, and depending on how they're implemented, go under several different names. Some common methods used are Teredo, enabled by default in Windows 7 and Vista, 6-4, and 6-4. There are also methods for proxying V4 to V6 that come with some of the downfalls and hacks to get around firewall NAT on V4 networks. If some method isn't in place to allow V4 and V6 hosts to communicate, the older V4 hosts will simply not be able to talk to V6 hosts at all. That's a bad thing.
So basically what you're saying is that when this happens, anybody still running IPv4 is going to have a lot of errors on their websites.
It's actually funny. So the IPv6 days that they've had, you can actually see the drop-off because you can see how the people who, you simply just can't see V6 anymore, right? And so what happens is, your DNS will try to find the next one down the list, which is V4, but it'll try the V6 one first. And so what ends up happening is now you may be able to get to a site, but it'll take like 3 or 4 seconds longer just to get the request back of where that site is. To you, you may think, oh crap, something's broken. So there's all these performance issues that now come around too, because usually with DNS, the point is when I request figuring out where a website is, it should be very quick, right? That lookup should be very quick. It needs to be, or else the whole thing kind of breaks down. And so when you start impacting that, then it gets crazy. But yeah, effectively, they're two different languages, and you can't just talk one. You have to talk both.
Yeah. Right?
So either you talk in both languages at the same time, or you have some sort of translator. And as you all know, having a translator in the middle makes it, there's some penalties there.
Fabulous, Pete. Well, thank you so much for answering our questions today. I hope these are helpful to everyone, and we hope to see you next time.